We're doing Megillah. We're up to page Yud Ches Amud Beis, the last thin line, the two dots. We'll dedicate our learning to the speedy recovering of Yosef's mother, Sarah Basora. Hashem should send her Refuah Shleima, and the operation tomorrow should be a success. Please tell him we dedicated tonight's learning to his mother. The Mishnah had said, Hayakotiva, if someone was writing the Megillah, Dorasha, or he was teaching the Megillah, Umagiha, or he was proofreading a Megillah, Inkiven Libo Yatza, if he focused his heart, he focused his intent, then he could have fulfilled his obligation in reading the Megillah. Chechi Dami. So the Gemara says, in which circumstance are we talking here? How so? If he's arranging each pasuk, then writing it, what do I care if he's focused? He reads a pasuk, it's still reading it by heart. You know, he says, "Vayhi bimei Achashverosh." Vayhi bimei Achashverosh. He's reading it before it's written. Ela dekatav psuka psuka vekarila. But you'll tell me he wrote the pasuk and then read it. He wrote the Vayhi bimei Achashverosh and then he read Vayhi bimei Achashverosh. Umi yatza? Has he really fulfilled his obligation doing that? Amar chelbo amar chambaguy amar Rav. We have a quote in the name of Rav. Halacha kedivrei Omer kula. The halacha is in accordance with the opinion that says that you must have all of the Megillah written before you. Vafilu l'mandam al mishudi tzricha shtei ktuva kula. And even according to the opinion that says you only have to read from Ishudi, but you have to have a full Megillah written in front of you. The halacha is like the one who says you have to have heard the whole Megillah to fulfill your obligation. That even the opinion that says only from the verse of Ishudi must one read in order to fulfill his obligation, nonetheless, you must have it all written, and if you're writing and reading as you go, well then, even if you write and then read from the written scroll, you don't have a complete written scroll when you're reading from it. Ela, but rather we have to say that the Mishnah is speaking in a case, the mancha Megillah kameh, he has a kosher Megillah placed before him, v'kari laminei psuka psuka, and he's reading verse by verse from the kosher Megillah, v'chatavla, and then he's writing it, and the Megillah is in the process of writing. So he's going to fulfill his obligation as he's reading off of the kosher Megillah. He writes. He writes. So each time he's reading off of the kosher Megillah. Let's say this is a support of Rabbi Bar Bar Chana's quote in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that it is prohibited to write even one letter if you're not copying it off of a written text. So here you see the Mishnah took for granted that he's reading off of a written text, that's where he's reading off of. The Mishnah assumes when you're writing a Megillah, it's off of a written text, you're copying. So let's say this is a support of Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that you're not allowed to write anything by heart, you're not allowed to write any part of Tanakh by heart, you have to copy it over when you're writing a Megillah or a Sefer Torah, etc. Says the Gemara, no, it's not necessarily a support. Maybe the Mishnah is speaking in a case where it just so happened that he was copying it off of that. But that's not a support that he really must copy it off of a written text. Yeah, clear?
So the question is obviously he must have been copied off of a kosher Megillah.
The Mishnah is obviously talking in a case where he copied off of a kosher one. The question is,
do
we assume if the Mishnah was speaking in that case that in every instance you must copy off of a kosher Megillah, that you're not allowed to write by heart, just like Rav Yochanan said? Rav Yochanan said you're never allowed to write by heart. You should always be copying. So our Mishnah is also assuming that you're copying. Maybe our Mishnah is a support of Rav Yochanan's opinion. Answers the Talmud, not necessarily. Maybe our Mishnah happens to be speaking about that case, but that doesn't mean it's obligatory. So the Gemara said, Lema, let's say this is a support of Rav Yochanan's opinion, right?
Okay.
Then the Gemara pushed off the support and said, not necessarily. Yes? Notice that the Gemara's denial is Dilma. Maybe, perhaps. It's not necessarily a support. Whenever the Gemara pushes off a claim with the word Dilma, the Gemara is really pushing off the claim weakly. And that claim might stand la'alacha. So when you're going to wonder, is the halacha like Rabbi Yochanan or not? You could say to yourself, is our Mishnah supportive of Rabbi Yochanan or not? Answer, possibly. It's not that we pushed off the claim. The Talmud said, maybe our Mishnah is a support. The Talmud answered, maybe not. Well, maybe not is not a strong rebuttal. It's a weak rebuttal, and that's why sometimes a rebuttal that begins with, well, perhaps, with Vidilma, is not accepted halachically. The rebuttal is not, we don't consider it halachically. Notice it. When you learn Gemara, you should notice which rebuttals are strong and which rebuttals are weak. Gufa. Okay, let's re-quote what we discussed earlier. Amar Abba Bar Bachan Amar Rabbi Yochanan. That quote that Rabbi Yochanan taught, Asur lichtov otachat shelo min hakhtav, one is prohibited to write even a single letter unless he's copying it off of a written text. I have an issue with that, says the Gemara. Meitivei. The following question. It says in the Tosefta. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Maaseb Rabbi Meir shalach laber shana be'asya. Story happened. Rabbi Meir went to Asya to convene with the great court and make it into a leap year. So he's there, and when we usually declare it a leap year during the month of Adar. So he's going to declare it a leap year, and he's stuck out there in Asya.
Why would he go to Asya to declare it?
I guess the Nasi had to be there on public matters.
Okay,
and they had, at that point, out of respect for the Nasi, they were only doing it with the Nasi.
Okay.
So he had no Megillah. Perm's coming up. What's Rav Meir do? V'katva milibo. So no problem. He just wrote it down. He knew it by heart. V'kra'a. And then he read off of that Megillah. So you see that Rabbi Meir wrote it from by heart. So how could Rabbi Yochanan tell us it's prohibited to write by heart?
Okay.
Amar Rabbi Yavu, Shani Rabbi Meir, Demkaim ve'vapapecha yashiru negdecha. Rabbi Meir is different. Rabbi Meir, he had a photographic memory. He could see the Megillah as he was writing. Rabbi Meir, he had a vision. He could see it as he was writing it. So Rami Bar Chama asked Rabbi Yirmiyahu Midifti, "My ba'afapecha yashiru negdecha." What does the verse mean when it says, "If you go with the Torah, then your eyebrows will be straight. You'll be able to look forward." That's talking about the words of Torah. Dichtiv behu, about the words of Torah, the verse says, "Hataif einecha bo veinenu." If you only ta'if einecha, if you only blink your eyelashes for a moment, hataif einecha. Ta'if einecha literally means to fold over your eyes. It means to close your eyelids. If you blink, it's gone. Right? We're learning now. In 10 minutes, we're going to stop. In 12 minutes, we won't remember anything. A blink of an eyelash. Suddenly you say, wait a second, what did I learn tonight? Someone's going to ask you. You're going to have a hard time remembering. Hata'if einecha bo veinenu. The pasuk says in Mishlei, Torah's like that. In a blink of an eyelash, you forget what you've learned. Yeah, Adam? You agree? I agree. Yeah.
You're going to
get into it, and then
you're going to be stuck
remembering it. And even so, but Rabbi Meir, they were straight. He could quote things perfectly.
So they didn't fly off his mind.
By him not. By Rabbi Meir not. He killed himself over the Torah. He worked very, very hard. So he got it. Rabbi Meir was the generation that learned in dire poverty. They had a hard time learning Torah. The Romans were persecuting them. And he was a disciple of Rabbi Akiva, just like Rashbi. And that generation was the generation of Rabbi Yehuda of Rabbi Eloi. And by that generation, the Talmud says, they were so poor when they learned, they'd have one talis, one cover for six students. Meaning they didn't have money for the bare necessities, and they were all sitting and learning. They killed themselves over the Torah. That's why we find such giants in that generation. They killed themselves to learn the Torah. You know, the more a person gives for Torah, you see the products.
Yes.
You have Rabbi Meir, you have Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, They have a lot of giants there. Rav Chisda Ashkeche L'Rav Chananel Da'ava Katav Svarim Shelo Min Aktav. Rav Chisda, he was Rava's father-in-law, remember? Rav Chisda, the Kohen, he bumped into Rav Chananel writing Svarim, and he wasn't doing Rav Yochanan's halacha. He wasn't copying them off the text. Amar le ruya kol Torah kula likatev al bicha. Really, the whole Torah could be written by you. You're a great man. Elakach amu chachamim, but you gotta know. Our sages said, asur lichtov otachat shelo min haktav. You can't write even one letter by heart. So now the Gemara analyzes it. Mi dekama kol Torah kula ruya shtikatev al picha mechlal demyusharin yenetzlo. If Rav Chisda told him, really, you could write the whole Torah that way, so we understand that Rav Chananel was so great that he also had this type of memory where everything he could redact everything. You ask him, he could quote. You know, most of us, you tell a guy, what's the beginning of the pasuk? Daberu. So he has to start Ashrei a pasuk earlier, and then he catches up to that pasuk. You can't go one word back. You tell a person, oh, the pasuk posach es yadecha. What's the word before that? So he has to start from einechol eilecha yisaber, and then he gets to the pasuk before that. But some people they could just go back a word, right? We can't. But there are minds like that where everything is very organized. They see it. So from the fact that he began by telling him, really, the whole Torah could be written by you, but the rabbi said he got a copy off of a text. So we understand that he wasn't just complimenting him. Really, he was fit to write the whole Torah by heart. And even so, Rav Chisda said, no, can do. Le'or Rabbi Meir katav, but Rabbi Meir did write by heart because he had it down so perfect. Answers the Talmud, Shatat Chak Shani. Shatat Chak is different. Rabbi Meir was stuck in a dire circumstance. They had no Megillah. No Jew's going to hear Megillah. So he relied on it. Abaye shara lidevei barchavu lemichtav tefillin umzuzot shelo min haktav. Abaye permitted the house of barchavu they should write tefillin and mezuzos by heart. Keman ki aitana detanya Rabbi Yomi aomer mishum rabbeinu tefillin umzuzot nichtavot shelo min haktav en tzichin tzirtot veyelcheta tefillin en tzichin tzirtot mezuzot tzichot tzirtot veaydi veaydi nichtavot shelo min haktav maitaim amigras krisan. So he went with the opinion of Rav Yirmiyah, that Rav Yirmiyah says, in the name of Rabbeinu, in different circumstances Rabbeinu is someone else, sometimes it's Rebbe, sometimes it's other Tanoim, or Amoraim even. Tefillin and mezuzos can be written by heart, and they do not require sirtut. Sirtut are those lines that we scratch into the klaf, into the parchment. And the halacha says, the Talmud, tefillin does not require sirtut, mezuzos does require sirtut, and they are both written by heart. Why? I'm a migras priest, and people know them by heart. Everyone knows them. So that's the halacha. Says Rashi, v'hilchisa, kach halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai. This is what we have going back to Sinai. Okay, so in summation, you want to write a Torah, you got to copy it off of something. You want to write tefillin and mezuzos, if you know it by heart, that's okay. You have to know which mezuzos is with two vavs, which tzitzis has how many yods. You have to know totafos. Yeah, you have to know which words are male, chaser. But once you know it, so that's okay, tefillin and mezuzos. Tefillin, he says, does not require sirtut. You don't have to have lines. Mezuzos, you do have to have lines. It's not so easy to write without lines. That's why tefillin, even on tefillin, on many... many tefillin, I think you will see lines, but at the end of the day, this is what the Gemara comes out with. And there's a Tosus somewhere here, and I can't find it. Tosus discusses the story with Rabbi Meir, but I don't know where it is. So maybe we'll bump into it still. Okay. Onward?
Okay.
Hayta ketuva b'sam. The Mishnah says, let's say the Megillah was written in different forms of different inks. Sam, sikra, kumus, kankantom. The Mishnah enumerated all kinds of inks. So now the Talmud going to tell us what these inks are. You want to know what sam is? It's sama. Rashi gives us a French word for it. Sama, sikra, you want to know what that is? Amar Rabbi Bar Bachana, sikarta, some kind of red dye. Sikarta shma. Kumus, you want to know what that is? That's kuma. It's some type of sap.
Seraphim.
Okay. Kankantum, you want to know what that is? We're on the top of Yotes Amar Aleph. That's Harto de Ushkifi. That's some kind of thing they use to use for shoe polish. Harto de Ushkifi. Some black that they use to black their shoes. Diftira, you want to know what type of hide is diftira? Dimaliach bekamiach, that you salted it and you worked the hide with water. Veloafitz. But you didn't use gall nuts. You didn't use gall nuts to make the hide. They used to put it in... gall nuts was... they used them for the tannic acid that were in the gall nuts. So, if you didn't let it sit in that acid, so that the acid would cause it to be more compressed. The acid would cause it... It would compress it. So if you do maliach v'kamiach v'lo avitz, that's diftira. What's niyar? Says the Gemara, machka. That's some type of paper they made by gluing grass together. Okay, maybe that's what they call rag paper? Yeah, I don't know. Okay.
That's the idea with the Egyptians used. They used the reeds.
Ah, okay. Say that Rashi says it, that they take some type of grass and glue it together, and that's how they made their paper. Mishnah said that the Megillah must be written, Achetek Tuva Ashurit, must be written in our Hebrew, Dichtiv Kichtava Mechizmanam, in its proper writing, in its proper time. Its proper writing is in Hebrew. Ala Sefer Uvidyo, it has to be written on parchment, it has to be written with Dio. Minalan, how do you know that? What's the source? Atya Ktiva Ktiva, we have a derivation. Ktiva Chavatichtov Estel Malka. It says over here, Esther wrote that these things must be so. Nechtivatam, and it says in Jeremiah, V'yom Alem Baruch Mipi V'yikra Lait Kol Dvim Eile, V'ani Kotev Ala Sefer B'Dyo. And I wrote it on parchment with Dio. So we derive that the Ktiva that Esther wanted was also on parchment with Dio. Now here there's a very interesting Tosfos. It shows up in a few places in Shas. What is Dio? Rabbeinu Tam says he disagrees with Rashi. You have to wonder whether Rashi's grandson would read from his Sefer Torah. Rabbeinu Tam says Rashi's Dio is disqualified. So how did that work? Okay, it's a Tosfos that shows up in the beginning of the second chapter of Shabbos also. This sugya shows up in a few places, and it's a standard Machlokas Rashi Rabbeinu Tam everywhere. Okay, on to the next Mishnah. Oh, so this is probably the most difficult part of the Gemara. This part. So it's good that we're up to the last 10 minutes. This way, if we don't get it, you'll only have frustration for 10 minutes. Ben Ir Shalach LeKrach, Ben Krach Shalach LeIr. If you have a guy who's been here, he comes from a regular city, and he went to a krach, he went to a walled city. So he ordinarily reads on the 14th. He went to a place that they read on the 15th. So he's visiting Yerushalayim. Uven krach, shalach le'ir. A Yerushalmi went to visit Tel Aviv. Imatid lachzolin komo. If he's planning on coming back home to his place, koikim komo. Then he reads like his own place. Right? Rav Listman, Matzah Shabbos, had to catch a Megillah reading because he was going back home. Vim lav, but if he is not headed back home, korei mahen, then he could read with them. Umechan korei tamgilah, adam tamgilah v'yotzeba. From where must the person read the Megillah and fulfill his obligation? V'yotzeba yidei chovato. Rabbi Meir omer kula. Rabbi Meir says, you got to read the whole thing. That's, we saw that opinion in the previous page. You want to fulfill your obligation, read everything. And we know the halacha is going to be that way. You have to hear every word of the Megillah in order to fulfill your obligation. Rabbi Yehuda, and Stam Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, is Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Ilai. Rabbi Yehuda says, Me'ish Yudi, you got to read the Megillah from that pasuk. Ish Yudi, Ayab Shoshana Bichah. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Me'achar Advarim Ha'ele. Rabbi Yossi says, you got to read it from Achar Advarim Ha'ele. That's where the real story begins, where Haman was given greatness. That's where the story begins. Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi Bar Techlachta. Okay, which Achar Advarim Ha'ele did he mean? Okay, let's see. There are two.
Okay.
Yeah, one is where Vashti is dead and he's looking for a new wife, and the other one is where Haman's given greatness. Okay, we'll see. It'll become evident in the Gemara.
Beginning of the third chapter.
So that's the one I said, yeah. When Haman was given greatness. Achar hadvarim ha'ele gidal ha'melech achashverosh es Haman. Yeah. Amar Rav. So, Rava says, we said in the Mishnah that he's got to be planning on coming home. Lo shanu ela she'atid lechzor b'leilei yudale. When the Mishnah says that he's planning on coming home, he reads like his own home. That means he's planning on coming home on the night of the 14th. But if he's not planning on coming back that night of the 14th, then he reads like then. Who's he talking about? He's talking about a guy who's visiting Yerushalayim? Or a guy who's visiting Tel Aviv? So Rashi learns he's talking about a guy who's visiting Tel Aviv. When do we say that he reads like Yerushalayim? When he's planning on coming back the night of the 14th. But if he's going to be there at daybreak the day of the 14th, so we say, hey, you're in Tel Aviv the morning of the 14th, and the night before already, you have to hear Megillah with them, and this morning you have to hear Megillah with them. You read with them. Okay, now what about Rav Listman, who is visiting Yerushalayim? When does he go by?
He wakes up.
The 14th or the 15th?
Both days.
Fine, but I'm saying, let's say he was in Yerushalayim the 15th.
Okay.
He was in Yerushalayim the 14th. Sunday morning he was here.
Okay.
And then Sunday afternoon he goes back to Harashan. Yeah, where is he? Givat Asaf. He goes back to Givat Asaf.
He's chayav to listen to the Megillah on Sunday.
Why on Sunday? If I'm in Tel Aviv and they read on Sunday on the 14th,
okay.
So I understand. Fine. So if I'm there at daybreak, so I have their chiyuv.
Okay.
But if I'm in Yerushalayim, the chiyuv of Yerushalayim, what comes when? The daybreak of the 14th or the 15th? So I'm saying, let's say he would have stayed here the 14th through the morning.
Okay.
And then left. And then he's back in Givat Asaf for the rest of the 15th.
Ah.
Then what?
Is he misformed? Is he
So that's what I'm saying. The question is, how do you read this line in the Gemara? Rashi learns this line is going on if you're in Tel Aviv. You're in a place where they read on the 14th, so then it goes by daybreak of the 14th. What would Rashi hold if you're in Yerushalayim? Do we go by the morning of the 14th or the morning of the 15th? I'm saying, if you're visiting Yerushalayim, then which day counts, the 14th or the 15th? Rashi didn't tell us. Okay, onward. Amar Rava. So Rava explained, Mina Aminolo. Where did I get this from? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, that's why the Jews who live in the open cities, the open city Jews who live in the open cities, they read on the 14th. Mechdi, let's see. The pasuk begins by calling them the open city Jews. So then why does the pasuk have to repeat who live in the open cities? He calls them the open city Jews. Why does he repeat who are dwelling in the open cities? Obviously, he's coming to teach me that even if you're in an open city just for a day in Tel Aviv, that's it. You're considered a Tel Avivian. Ashkechan Paruz. So the Gemara says, fine. You found a source to prove me that you've proven to me that a guy who's in an open city, it's enough, he's there one day, that's enough. Because in other issues of halacha, we say you have to be in a city for 30 days, for half a year. You guys learned in Baba Basra, there are different halachot when you become part of the city. But no one says by daybreak, you stay till the morning, that's it. You're a citizen. Doesn't work that way. Here we have a special derivation. But this is a special halacha. Ordinarily we say it has nothing to do with being there by daybreak. It has to do with whether you're there long enough to become a citizen. So the Gemara says, okay, you've proven to me about the open cities. Mukaf min alan. How do you know the walled cities have the same rule? Svarau. So the Gemara says, logic. Mide paruz ben yomo karui paruz, mukaf ben yomo karui mukaf. If a guy is considered to be an open city citizen for through being there one day, so we assume you're also considered a walled city citizen just by being there one day. Okay. Okay. The next tomorrow we'll see next week. I have to go down and take tendons. This is it. This is really, now you've finished the whole Gemara on this idea of traveling back and forth. And that's why it's so complicated. Because this is all the Gemara you have on it. Now what do you do? So this is where the Rishonim give us a lot of work. The Rishonim down to Halacha.